Hi, my name is Michael Poley, and I've never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer. My friends are obsessed and always make jokes and references to it, and so now, 20 years later, I've been convinced to watch the show from beginning to end, one episode a week. I'm a Buffy virgin.
Well, welcome to another episode of Buffy Virgin. My name is Michael. I'm the virgin, normally. On the show today, we've got John Landis, a school teacher.
Hey, everybody.
Dennis, a cartoonist.
Hey.
And Dr. Travis Frog, a noted physician.
Hi there.
So, in this episode, we watched Nightmares, Season 1, Episode 10 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It aired in 1997, like all of Buffy, Season 1, May 12th, and it was directed by Bruce Seth Green. Does that mean anything to anybody?
It's very similar to Seth Green.
It's a different person, but he directs a lot of Buffy episodes.
I think they're the same person.
And no relation. Per Wikipedia.
That's probably how Seth Green got his big start, was through Bruce.
So we want to talk about this episode of Buffy. Now, if you've listened to every episode, you find that we change the structure every now and then of how we talk about Buffy. And this episode will be no different. We're going to talk about it a little bit differently. We actually watched this episode before, so this is a re-record for us, but season two probably won't happen so much, but, you know, it's a podcast, so things like this happen. So we have seen all of season one of Buffy, so to give some context, we're just a bit ahead, though. We have not started yet season two. So we have seen this before. We've discussed it before in detail. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about every single scene, which is what I think I did the first time I recorded this. Instead, we're just going to talk more generally about the themes and issues in this episode. I will generally talk about the plot, and everyone on the podcast will feel free to bring up anything that's meaningful or interesting to them as it relates to the act structure, overall act structure. So, Act 1, after the cold open. Cold open is Buffy is in the Master's lair, finally having discovered it, and it is a completely accurate version of the Master's lair, and she's killed by the Master. And then the Act 1 kind of structurally, and I think we talked about what happens in Act 1. Act 1 is basically all about Wendell. So Wendell has a tarantula nightmare, and nightmares have come to life at the school. Anybody want to talk about this Act 1 of nightmares?
Sorry, Buffy has her nightmare that she's taking a test, right?
Yeah.
And that she doesn't know any of the answers, but Cordelia is actually there. And similarly, all of our characters are there when Wendell's having his nightmare.
Right, the tarantula nightmare, yep.
If they're reacting to something in the nightmare, is there some degree to which, like, which people are real? Because some people have to be part of the nightmare scenario in order for it to act out. Like, the teacher has a nightmarish visage in Buffy's dream, right? So which people are real and will therefore, you know, sort of remember being a part of the nightmare, and which people are being animated so that they can act out the nightmare?
I think for the most part, bystanders are really there, depending on the nightmare. For instance, like the punk or the gang that we see right in the background in Act 1, the gang of Alphonsies, as I think you called them, like they're there, but the mom is not real. The mom that comes in and embarrasses them.
Right. So all of those guys would remember that as the time that his mom came in.
Yeah. But his mom is really mom, probably at work, yeah, or something.
So he's going to go to mom later and be like, "That was messed up how you came to school and kissed me." And mom's not going to remember it. Is that the aftermath?
Yeah. Yeah, just like Buffy's dad wouldn't be able to recall
right
when he showed up at school.
Right. I guess Buffy that they got divorced because of her. Yeah.
It's a who cares question, but
no, I mean it's a fair point though, right? Like some people are gonna remember these nightmares and some people are not. And it sounds like people that are in the Scooby Gang will definitely remember, and people that are not in the Scooby Gang will not remember.
Yeah,
like everything.
Yeah, by the time this episode has ended, like the nightmares have infected the entire town, right? To spoil right this episode,
oh,
so
yeah,
like everybody in this town has had like some vision of terrible things that they either black out or just choose to ignore because they live in Sunnydale. Like, the psychology of your average Sunnydale resident is fucked up.
I think to some degree some of nightmares are real. Like, if we think at the very end, the nightmare with that monster, like, that guy, I guess he's real, but not real. I don't know. I was under the impression that most of the nightmares were not really, they were all real. They were just, you know, they were just magic type nightmares. Like, I thought the master really was, like, above ground.
No, because the master even has a scene where he's, like, talking to the Chosen One, and he's,
well, that's
like,
at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, and he's like, there's some fucked up shit going on that's not to do with us, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Because that's how the master talks now.
I think most of the nightmare stuff, it's pretty vague.
Well, Lucky Nightmare, like a dream,
it's vague.
Is definitely like a creation of the nightmare for sure. So the Lucky 19 monster is the monster in the basement that is the physical, like, or the rather the metaphorical manifestation that's also physical of the kids, who's not the annoyed one, a new kid, who was attacked by his coach. And it's like the physical manifestation of the coach, in which his hand is like a bat, even a meaty bat.
Right.
And that guy's, like, gets destroyed, right? They kind of Scooby-Doo him in the end, and that kind of destroys him, revealing that, you know, it's a manifestation. It's a vision of some kind.
Right.
So he never acts like a real person anyway. They don't have conversations with Lucky 19.
Right.
That's the real nightmare, right, is the Lucky 19 character.
Right.
But that monster really beats up that chick and puts her in the hospital. Like, that's a real... Like, I understand, like, the opera singer, that's fake. They weren't really there. It was all...
Oh, yeah, the opera singer's not a student at the school that now became a big opera singer.
But, like, right. That monster that actually hits people and puts them in the hospital, like, that's...
I think it's clear that they can have real consequences. Yeah. I guess my concern
it's is... It's like a hard light hologram on the holodeck with the safety... the safety program has malfunctioned.
As always happens.
Because Riker touched something.
So like, here's a particular weird one, right? So, like, there seems to be a point of view thing where, like, the person who's having the nightmare is the real person, and then other people may be hallucinated. I mean, it's real, has real consequences, but, like, so, like, Buffy's dad, when Buffy's dad breaks up with her, dad is not the real guy. And so, like, later he's not going to remember it, and it's... He's, you know, being manifested for Buffy's nightmare. So then, yeah. If that's true,
well, I don't know that he's not real. I mean, I guess
he's not real, but Giles saw him. But he's,
yeah, I think
it's, dude, he's a hard light hologram.
No, I think he was really there. I think he was caught up in the magic.
Okay,
Giles lost his eyesight, and everyone, like, that persisted. I don't know. I mean, I guess if you want to analyze it, I'm the opinion of some of these things really did happen, and they included people who are physically there, and they should all be confused. They're not.
So.
Buffy, because every new week, no one remembers anything. But anyways.
So that makes sense then, because, like, okay, so my question was going to be, like, when Buffy gets, since we're way just jumping around from act to act.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I think let's get rid of the act structure. I think if you have something interesting to say that's a sentence long, we're good. Let's go.
Okay. So then Buffy becomes a vampire, and it's stated that that is Giles's nightmare, not Buffy's nightmare. But that's not clear.
But Buffy literally becomes a vampire, though. That happens.
I think that's actually, they have a shared similar nightmares, right? She dreams about being killed by the master, so that happens. He dreams about her dying, so that happens. So those things kind of combine similarly. And then she has nightmares about being a vampire, which are her nightmare because Giles says, "You never told me you dreamt of becoming a vampire." So things, for a story... reasons, like, merge in, and because it's a dream, like, it's blurry, but that's also cool. I like that scene a lot, so you know.
But also the physical geography of the school changes and the world changes because they're in nightmare geography.
I mean,
it's kind of lovely. I feel like they break a lot of rules about how nightmares work. It's not traditional Nightmare on Elm Street rules, and yet it is. Like, they just kind of have fun with the world of nightmares. The rules are not super solid. Like, Buffy turns into a vampire and gets killed and then survives, but it's not like she actually dies, like, in the end.
Yeah, but she does have extra strength, the extra strength of being a vampire, in addition to her Slayer strength.
It's great. I mean, like, they pick like awesome nightmares. They disregard the rules and they play, was it hard and fast or loose and fast or hard and
fast loose? Fast and loose.
No, they do something.
The expression.
Yeah, I've heard it both ways. that's a TV reference joke for someone out there to get. I like the nightmares like a lot in this episode. You know, the like ones that really stick out. The reason I think I like the nightmares is because first season you're getting to know the characters a lot, and normally you just kind of know kind of boring, like kind of sad things. Or like Xander's a horn dog, or you know, Willow likes Xander. But like this episode, like you get to know or learn like interesting, not necessarily sad things, but like strange and like very like relatable fears. Well, outside of being turned into a vampire, but they're almost all very relatable. So that's why I really like this episode.
It's surprising they could go a lot deeper and darker for some of their nightmare choices, and some of them are pretty banal nightmares or kind of childish. But
I think it's a structure of building the nightmares from like mild to trying to. The scariest one is the Buffy combo dream, right? So it has to like build up to that. But I mean, the spider freakout dream isn't scary if you're not afraid of spiders. But like, I have friends who are genuinely afraid of spiders. Like, won't watch the opening credits of Buffy because there's a spider crawling. So that would really freak them out.
Speaking of spider fears, there's this really funny VR app about facing your fears, and it is totally, like, I'm sure would be a trigger for people with arachnophobia problems, because it's supposed to be like, cure your fears by embracing them, right? So it has to shrink down to the size of like a small, like maybe a pencil on a desk, and then has a big spider come towards you. Like, this is terrible, but it's like, but it's in this conceptual thing about a lesson about fear and psychology, but it's really just total scare fest, and it would be a mean trick to play on someone.
That sounds fun. One of the times when my brother's schizophrenic. One time when he had to go to the hospital, he was hallucinating being covered in tiny spiders that were trying to eat him. He couldn't get him off.
And it was like, God.
I mean, that's like classic, like hallucination, like scratching yourself because spiders are on you stuff. So that shit's real. I mean, it's interesting when you're not afraid of it, how, like, that doesn't sound threatening. Or, like, it's just, like, it sounds like, oh, that's such a cliche thing to be afraid of. But people genuinely have, like, crazy arachnophobia. So.
Well, it's good they start with a really relatable nightmare, right?
Like, that's I think that's the point. I mean, all of the naked at school stuff is I think, it's an entry point for the audience. I think if they jump straight into, you know, death and violence nightmares, it would just seem like any other episode of Buffy.
I'm happy there's no sports nightmares. No one has a nightmare about because that's the reality. But nobody has a nightmare about the actual reality is like this kid was brutally beaten up because of his sports failure, you know, which whatever. But like they can't do that because that would be too telegraphing of the real problem, right? Where this nightmare world stemmed from, which is sports anxiety.
We haven't talked about how Cordelia suffers in this episode yet.
That was delightful. She has frizzy hair, and that's her nightmare.
And she becomes a nerd.
Kidnapped by the chess club. I think she gets off pretty bad. I mean, her boyfriend gets stabbed, and then one of her other friends gets beat up. But so she doesn't come off like the worst, but.
Like we've talked about before, like at least at this point, Cordelia has some knowledge of that, you know, of the Hellmouth. At least on some level, she understands that vampires are real, and she understands that there's, you know, this. She might wake up later and like realize that this was supernatural, and you know, she can move on with her life. But there's all of these people, like we talked about before, who just have no idea and just have to like remember that something really happened to them.
Does Cordelia have knowledge at this point of vampires?
Not like super, because I think that really culminates in the final episode.
Oh, okay. It's not the invisible girl one, right?
Because we're watching out of order now. I'm getting mixed up.
Yeah. So episode 11, which we'll talk about next week, and I won't be there for that because I'll be at Alien Con, which I've already been to.
Wait, but you call us from Alien Con, don't you?
Yeah, I do. In the future, that happens.
We'll take that call. Your boy Armin Shimmerham had a great line in this episode, which is, no one's died this week. He's like, no one's dead. No one's dead. Like somebody gets rolled off in that stretcher. He's like, no one's died this week.
That's a victory this week for the principal.
Classic.
Armin Shimmerham.
I mean, that's just as much a reasonable name.
Shimmerham sounds delicious. Like it's been glazed so much it sparkles.
Fine, I'm going to have to look up his name.
I mean, I could just tell you his name because I know it.
It's Shimmerman. It was close. Shimmerman of the Vampires.
Yeah. Oh, man, he's the original Twilight vampire, Shimmerman.
So the things that happen to people, I don't know if this is good to read, but the things that happen to people in the nightmares in this episode are being killed by a vampire, being covered in spiders, being unprepared for a test, being naked at school, being attacked by a monster, having bad hair, being attacked by clowns, that your parents secretly hate you, that you're on stage and you're not prepared, that you've been turned into a vampire, that there's something wrong with your hands, and that there are giant wasps.
Did you do the not being able to read and then going blind?
Oh, no, I missed the Giles ones, yeah.
Not being getting lost in your own library. Just like Marcus Brody from Indiana Jones.
The nightmare I want to talk about that we talked a little about when we watched this again is the nightmare of your parents need to get divorced, or I'm getting divorced because of you, which was, we talked a little bit about when we watched this together, John.
Yeah.
Our parents are both divorced, and our parents got divorced in high school, junior high school. But at no point did I blame myself for my parents' divorce, but I was definitely set up. I think this must have been a big, cultural story in the 80s that, came across big time in the 90s where it's like, hey, it's not your fault, kids. There must have been a bunch of kids in the 70s or 60s, whatever, who felt like it was their fault.
Some of them, surely at some point it was their fault, right?
Well, yeah.
Just parents, like law of averages, there must be somewhere where it was the kids. Some family where it was the kids' fault, just because, you know.
Yeah, like if your kid's Bart Simpson or something. Like.
I like that Bart Simpson is your example of a go-to person who would wreck a family.
It's on the tip of your tongue. I mean, I
can use Dennis the Menace or Bart Simpson. Maybe.
Well, I'm definitely not going to use Dennis the Menace. So.
Yeah, no.
He was the problem totally child, yeah.
Yeah, problem child. A Chucky-looking motherfucker.
I just remember from, long before I ever had an inkling that my parents would split up, which means that, seeing stuff on Sesame Street or PSAs or after school special kind of things that were just entirely geared towards whatever you do, just realize it's not your fault was the entire message. And so when it finally happened, which felt inevitable, by the way, in some way, because of all that media, when it finally happened, I was like, okay, well, at least I know it's their fault.
Yeah, that was the sad thing about being in the 90s. There's the profound inevitability of divorce. Like, yep, your parents are going to get divorced. And then it happens. You're like, wow, this is really hard to deal with. And now every holiday counts twice now. Ugh. And I have to go to two different places. And yeah.
I often felt a little weird that my parents weren't divorced because it was just so, when I was hanging out with you guys, I was the only person who didn't have a divorced family, right?
Yeah.
In high school. Because it was so common.
Almost the only person. But yeah, no, most of us had divorced parents. Maybe because it culturally didn't happen very much in the 70s and 80s. But so, I mean, divorce used to not be that common. But maybe the reason they had to come out with all those specials was, boom, it's happening all over.
Right. We have no tools to deal with it.
You didn't have tools. I have to make mention. It feels like this is the first episode where we see Buffy's father.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that? No. Yeah.
I think you're right.
Okay. Hank Summers.
Oh, I couldn't remember his name. Good job, Travis.
Yeah. I'm good for those details. Yeah, Hank Summers, Joyce Summers. I mean, this was a good episode because you had a lot of Joyce Summers, and you got to see Hank Summers. So,
did anybody else connect with any of the nightmares? I mean, that was the one that I think was supposed to speak to me, but
I've definitely had public speaking nightmares, but I've done enough public speaking that I think it comes from real life, not from just total fear.
You mean your fear is well founded?
Well, you know, sometimes, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's well founded. Sometimes public speaking is really stressful.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think.
I started taking a stand-up course. I took my first class yesterday, and I think like 3 of the 12 people said they were there so they could become better at public speaking. So definitely a huge concern. But they also all seemed angry and like they had a deep anger.
Angry comics. Did they pace back and forth while doing their set?
We don't have sets yet. We're just doing the basic exercises to get going.
Cool.
I've definitely taken some lessons from that course and bringing it to how we structure this podcast, which I'll bring up later.
Cool.
Yay.
This episode, I don't know. I mean, I think it's cool to remember that everyone's got nightmares. That's like a fun thought.
So speaking of which, so one of the things this show brings up, of course, is like, you know, everybody in Scooby Gang has nightmares. What that they become to life? What would be the terrible nightmares that would come to life for you if you were in this episode, if you were, you know, going to Sunnyvale High School, whatever? And that's a tough question, I know, totally. And I guess I get to pick, you don't necessarily have to cast the people on this podcast, but maybe you do. Maybe that's a requirement in your nightmare. What would they be doing? And I, the other thing we could talk about, if that one's too weird, is the nightmares that you've had lately. I'll hopefully have had nightmares in the past week that we can talk about. I have some.
I'm always having nightmares, so I have plenty of... I went to a funeral yesterday, so I had funeral-related nightmares last night. But most of my nightmares are, like, madness-related, because, like I mentioned earlier in this podcast, my brother's schizophrenic. So most of my nightmares involve, like, either me or people around me going insane. You know, just, like, the basic, like, who you are deconstructing and falling apart mentally. That's my big nightmare, I guess. So that can represent itself in a number of ways, both, like, because it's a dream physically, it could be, like, a house falling apart as, like, a symbol for your mind, or it could be, like, you know, you just going insane, you just, like, no longer having control over your actions or thoughts. Blah. Fun stuff. I'm out of coffee. Sorry, that wasn't fun.
No, but thank you for sharing.
No, thanks for sharing. I don't have a follow-up for that. My nightmares are really banal compared to that. Like, my nightmare I had, which is emotionally a nightmare, but the actions themselves, I'll describe them. They're not going to sound nightmarish. This is my nightmare of the week. I could do this every week for the rest of my life. Something will happen that will trigger a nightmare. But for me, this week, it was going to a water park inside of a thrift store. And I was in line for the water park part, and my wife was really upset with me that I was by myself in line for this water park, but then she also didn't want me to be with her. So this is this like wife anxiety nightmare where my wife and I have been together almost 13 years, and it's like this crazy world where it's like, I want you close to me, but I also want my own space. And this is totally that anxiety nightmare. And it's like, it's so banal, but it's also like, I wake up like, I need to talk about this. What's going on with us?
Way to handle it, actually. Way to wake up and then talk about it. That seems really healthy, Mike.
I was so confused. I thought you were like actually in a thrift store that had a water park because you live in Portland. And I was like, like the nightmare, like you lost your trunks or something. I was like, hold on. No, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. You weren't like, I thought there was like going to be another thing. Like,
oh, sorry. There wasn't another thing. I mean, I could tell you the other thing is like waiting in line in this, like the line kind of entertainment was that you were in a thrift store. So you could look at all the books and bullshit as you're waiting for the water slide part, but you didn't have time to really look through anything. And I was like, some of this stuff is neat. And it's like, can I look, come back? And they're like, sorry, this is just a water park. It's not thrift store really. You can't get any of this stuff. And they had like rare, interesting books and games and stuff like, oh, that looks cool. But like, I had no time, had to keep moving.
Oh my God, this
Mike, is for you. This is one man's nightmare is another man's business plan. I think you need to get on this.
That's a really common dream / nightmare thing is like spaces combining and reshaping, right?
Oh, totally.
Like,
I get those. Yeah.
And the dream and the Buffy episode does that well a couple times.
It does. Yeah.
Oh, I guess I should answer the nightmare question. But also this episode, you guys don't have to hate because David Boreanaz was not in this episode. No Angel. This is an Angel-less episode, which is interesting.
Yay.
That's because he doesn't have dreams or nightmares.
He's a blank canvas. Was he
just walking his dog this entire episode? I mean, did he go on? Did he get evicted from his like beach house? I mean, like what happened to that guy? Like,
I'm sure there's an episode of Angel that answers the question of where he was during every episode where he's missing.
he's shopping for like lighting fixtures for his.
There is a apartment. Nightmare episode of Angel in season 5.
There are further nightmare episodes.
But probably his nightmare involves losing his soul or like encountering his evil self or some dumb crap like that.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
I don't have like nightmares, like asleep nightmares. I can't sleep in the dark. But I don't really dream.
Interesting. We can back up on that in a minute though. I'll wait.
But just during like the day, like awake nightmares, I worry about dying suddenly, sudden death, like dying suddenly or developing memory loss those are the big ones. So necessarily like afraid of this or that. Oh, that's right. I'm afraid of being assaulted on the street. I do have that nightmare when I'm walking on the street. That's a general fear. It never happened before. So
I have definitely memory loss nightmares. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my memory. Yeah. I'm also totally afraid of audio hallucinations. Like when I hear something, I'm like, did that really happen? Or did I make it up? Am I starting to hear things?
Oh man. Now you guys are giving me new fears.
These are all very real fears, right?
Well, okay. When Mike and I were, hanging out in Orlando, I like heard a door open and close that he didn't, and I was like, "Fuck, I'm going crazy."
Oh no!
It's just ghosts. It's just ghosts, Dennis. Nothing too troublesome.
I guess like the things I worry about. Yeah, I worry about my partner like getting a debilitating illness and having to take care of them. I worry about my parents because I'm so far away from them and something happening to them, even though they're crazy. I worry about, oh my gosh, I almost don't want to go into this. But like my dad doesn't want to visit this this year because he's concerned about radiation from Fukushima affecting fish, and he thinks we should move. And like, I don't share those fears, but I fear for my dad's crazy fear.
So like, sorry. I don't mean to make fun of this, or he doesn't want to visit you because he can't give up eating fish for that long.
No, the fish is part of the issue.
Oh, okay. Well, part of the ecosystem, I guess, because something will eat the fish, maybe.
But the whole West Coast is in danger of radiation, right? That's part of his fear, like, right? And
wow.
We're all irradiated here, and we need to leave.
I tell you one cruel trick you can take them to the there's this place in Washington where they made nuclear material for World War II and it's a disaster. You could take them there, not tell them. That would be pretty cruel. He probably would have a heart attack if he did that. That's a sad place. It's going to cost like $10 billion to clean up. What's the name of this place in Washington? I'll find it. John, what are your fears?
Well, I mean, compared to everything you guys are talking about, I feel like I've
Like a healthy human being?
Did maybe all know, you have a nightmare that all your dollars became pounds? I've had that. I'm sure you're having that nightmare.
No, I mean, I do. I mean, I am like, so you're referring to, you know, one thing that's coming up in my life is that I'll be moving at some point in the next year or 2 years to the UK. And yeah, that's a source of a lot of anxiety because it's not something that, first of all, it's a big deal. It's something that you have to, you know, plan for and be organized about. And I'm not good at planning or organizing. And so that's freaking me out. But also it's not completely in my control because, you know, my partner, she has to move back to the UK where she's from. And she has to be able to get a job and make a certain amount of money before she can sponsor a visa for me. And it's, so it's not totally under my control. So it is pretty anxiety making. But I don't think I have dreams that I'm aware of that are about that specific. I mean, I'm sure they are on some symbolic level, but like most of the dreams I have that aren't, I think nightmare is a weird word. I have dreams about like boredom. Like I have all these dreams constantly about jobs I used to have because I've had a lot of shitty jobs in my life. So I had a dream that I was working at Mendelssohn's again pretty recently. Of course, it was some weird nightmare Mendelssohn's that was, you know,
oh, you work at Mendelssohn's, huh?
Yeah. Mendelssohn's for the listeners.
Yeah,
Mendelssohn's for the listener is a it's a warehouse store in Dayton, Ohio. There's a man who bought an enormous building that's like one huge city block, and it's an 8-story building that takes up the entire block, and it's a sort of a surplus store, but it's horribly disorganized and strange. And I worked there for 8 months. It's pretty weird.
It's legendary. It's legendary in Dayton, Ohio.
It's sort of like an indoor landfill.
It's the story you'd expect Dr. Frankenstein to do all his shopping.
Yeah. Yes. That's a good way to describe
besides
it.
Besides the morgue and the cemetery, this is his other stop.
Yeah. Or I'll have dreams that I'm working at restaurants that I used to work at and I think the nightmare part of it is that, oh, I don't have my good job anymore. I have to go back to my only skill, which is making sandwiches for other people.
And is the dream then the like repetitive task?
Sort of the repetitive task, but actually it's more like I have to go back to these people who I, you know, like rose above these like people I used to work with. And like, humiliate myself or humble myself to like go back to a service job. Not that there's anything wrong with service work. I don't. It sounds like I'm really
no. But people who work in the service industry know that. Like, anytime I've worked in a restaurant only briefly, and I had anxiety dreams when I was doing that, and I didn't work there that long. I was like a front of house seater, and I had nightmares about that stupid job. And then afterwards, because everyone's like. There's so much stress in a restaurant job, and it's all, you know, interpersonal stuff. It's barely about the food. It's just about the people.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. One of the hard things is having those dreams when you work there, and then you're like you have a long dream about working your job, and it's like really repetitive and like scary in that way. And then you wake up and you have to go do it again. And you're just oh my God, I can't, like, I have literally no escape from this.
I think it must be partly like, I don't know anything about brains, but like it seems to me that like I, you know, spread tomato sauce on who knows how many pizza crusts in my life because I had
bragging.
A job and I did, you know, hundreds of them every shift, right? So there's some part of my brain that knows how to do that really, really, really well. And I think, you know, at nighttime, sometimes it must just like, whoever's throwing the switches in there is like, well, let's go back to that. We've got... all this space.
Well, you haven't slung any pizza sauce recently. We got to keep that up.
It's like there's some mad director in your head that's like, roll that beautiful tomato sauce footage.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So in Buffy.
Yeah, so anyway, Buffy.
This was the only episode I think the whole series ever does where they Scooby-Doo. They legit Scooby-Doo it, where they pull the mask away at the end.
Oh, really?
I mean, just because usually, I think so. I mean, just like usually, the monster is real. So the idea that like there's a mask to pull away is kind of unusual for the show.
I was surprised how terrible the villain was in this episode. Like they do it in a kind of banal way, but the villain is truly terrible. That this so the story as it, you know, gets spoiled at the end, right? And spoiled, revealed, this kid's baseball coach beat him horribly after he didn't make a catch or whatever, miss something. And then the kid is now in a coma or something in a nightmare world where the coach as a monster is trying to kill him. And now we're all trapped in this nightmare world with him because his nightmare is so, it's just such a terrible thing that was done to him that it triggers the supernatural thing. I mean, I don't know what I don't think they discuss or they figure out the supernatural trigger for it.
They don't even bother. I think they just say Hellmouth. Like
basically Giles says Hellmouth. Such things are easier on the Hellmouth.
But like if something truly terrible happens, it triggers a supernatural thing. I mean, we see this happen in the next episode a little bit with the girl that comes invisible, right? Which is this awesome manifestation of a real problem where you're ignored by your coworker, your classmates, you're ignored by the people around you and your friends, and you literally become invisible. And here it's like something really heinous happened, so heinous that now everyone is living in your nightmare.
Yeah, and it's not only heinous in the normal Buffy way, but it's a real life problem. I mean, like, kids really do get beaten. Like, right. So it's the nightmare is actually kind of a fantastical thing, but like, yeah, the reveal is like
been directed by Guillermo del Toro. That's all, you know.
Can we assume from this episode then that like this, since we aren't having nightmare episodes every other week, that this child is the victim of the worst child abuse that's happening in Sunnydale?
Like, maybe somebody we don't see puts a warding spell at the hospital coma, blah, blah. I don't know.
Right. I'd like to draw the happy conclusion that this is the only major child abuse that's happening in Sunnydale. Because otherwise,
it is a small town. Small towns don't get a lot of abuse.
Well, it's a one Starbucks town.
Yeah, so you get one abused kid for every Starbucks. That's kind of how it works.
Oh, they need to stop expanding.
I know! They're fueling terrible beatings. They don't even know.
Yeah, we're going to get shut down now. Also, Hannaford Nuclear, Hanford, Washington is the site of this nuclear disaster. The real nuclear disaster, you can tell your dad. But
yeah, I'm not going to take him there. That would be a big mistake. So anything else you want to talk about?
I think maybe one thing we can talk about that we talked about when we recorded this before, but is so cool is the master's little speech about fear where he fondles the cross is, I don't know if there's much to be said about it other than that it's a great moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that part's really cool. I really like that.
He doesn't say fear is the mind killer, does he?
I'm not sure. He may have said that. He may have said fear is the mind killer.
That's from Dune.
Oh.
I have from my list from the last time we recorded this, my list of recommendations if you like nightmare or dream fiction. Because, I mean, we could just obviously recommend or talk about the Nightmare on Elm Street series, but I would recommend David Lynch movies instead, if you want like real dreamlike imagery, and the movie Waking Life. For comics, I would recommend Rick Veitch's Dream Comics Verbit Fiends, which just has a new collection for the first time in like 20 years. And the X'd Out series by Charles Burns.
Yeah, I was going to say that same thing. I just bought that today. It's like, read through it.
It's really good. And like half of it takes place kind of in a dream. And it's a, you know, you piece together the story slowly. So there's a lot of, you know, not everybody likes dream fiction, but I think I enjoy dream fiction when it's done well. So those were my recommendations. And I could also list all the good Nightmare on Elm Street movies. People care.
I think the only time I don't like dream fiction is when it's like used in like as a kind of a rand, like that trope in movies where you get like a Native American shaman or guide that guides a white person awful. Through a dream. And it doesn't have to be Native American. It could be Aboriginal. You know, it's just the other guides the white guy through a dream in order to understand himself and solve a problem and maybe save the world. That stuff annoys me. So we didn't recommend any of those. That's good.
Let's see.
We can always recommend Nightmare Campus. The anime.
Well, why do they call it Nightmare Campus?
You find that out in the first episode, actually.
All I remember is those little trolls nibbling on a woman's body.
Oh, I have
this is not safe for anyone, really, but they will clearly explain to you within that first episode of watching why they call it Nightmare Campus. So at least that plot is resolved.
I have a mic prediction from a previous episode to discuss.
Oh, awesome. Please.
So in episode, hold up a second. In episode 3, which I don't remember what episode that was, but in episode 3, in The Witch, yeah, Mike predicted that there will be no funerals in season 1. Now, I think we have to I don't know we can call this one necessarily refuted, because I don't know if you would count this as a funeral. What do you guys think?
This is at the very most just a graveyard visit, not a funeral. There's not okay. Listen, if there isn't food being served and some sort of religious guy talking, it's not a funeral.
Yeah, okay.
Not a funeral. But...
Yep, you heard it from the expert, folks.
The guy who goes to funerals a lot.
Yeah. So Mike's prediction that there will be no funerals in season 1 might still be true. We don't know.
We know, but we don't know. Okay.
Do you want to make any further predictions, Mike?
So I guess I already know that in Angel there's going to be a nightmare episode, but I still think that Buffy is going to go back into the dream world at some point. This seems like too valuable supernatural space for them not to revisit it. So I feel like they're going to come back to this world again, this nightmare world. I don't know what context. Maybe it'll be a vision that Buffy has. Maybe it'll be a nightmare that just one person has. But like the setup of the show with the cold open, it's too easy not to have another nightmare of some kind. So like, yeah, we'll see more nightmares.
Very good. Any other predictions?
Oh, based on this episode?
Sure.
More kids. More kid villains. More little kid villains in season 2 and 3.
So we already know about the anointed one, not counting
that. Not just the anointed one. We're going to see more of these supernatural kids.
More specifically, so just to get this, the letter of this right, you're predicting more supernatural
oh,
children.
Oh, no! John's making me sign a contract. Wait, what'd you say?
You're predicting, because first you said more kid villains, and then you said more supernatural kids. Which one is it?
Okay, there will be one more supernatural kid. Joss Whedon's not done with supernatural kids.
One more, precisely, not two more.
There will be one more. There's the anointed one, and there'll be another.
And then the anointed two.
He can't help it. It might be a kid girl, may not be a kid boy, but it'll probably be another kid in this show.
Okay. A minor.
A minor, minor.
Look, kids are always creepy in movies.
Yes.
They say creepy things. They speak the truth that adults dare not speak. Joss Whedon needs more kids in this show.
So if there's more than one, the prediction is incorrect.
Oh my god.
I don't think we've ever been this specific before, John.
I'm sorry, I have the spreadsheet open, so I
can I get some spread at least? Like 1 to 3 more kids?
Just say more supernatural kids. You're the one
more supernatural kids. Not okay. Just one. More okay. Supernatural okay. Kids.
Yes.
They may even have young Buffy show up. I don't know what's going to happen on the show. There we go. There's another prediction. We're going to see
young Buffy.
We're going to see 10-year-old Buffy show up in one of these episodes.
Okay.
Wow.
Buffy may have to confront the younger version of herself, literally, not in a night.
All right.
Good stuff.
I want to do, like, I should remember to get it together for this, but I want to do, like, a sound effect for when we confirm or deny a prediction, like a little bell or something.
Oh, I can add a sound effect in later.
What yeah, I know you can.
Do the cash machine sound effect.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And then like a womp womp if it's wrong.
No, like cha-ching.
Seth Green, like Seth Green from the Rallies commercial.
Is that Seth Green?
Yeah. I predict the guy from the Rallies commercial will be on the show later.
Oh, my God.
Ching.
But a thing, not the real thing.
Oh, my God. All right.
I think, you know.
I remember a teacher telling kids, you please need to stop saying cha-ching. All right, kids? It's like fourth grade teacher.
So
I think probably a lot of our listeners will not even know those old Rally commercials from when we were in elementary school.
Especially if they're not from the Rally's region. Like, I'm in Checkers territory currently.
I'm in play it right now, then. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Rally's cha-ching, right?
Yeah.
Could it be Seth Green?
Yes, look at that.
Oh, we can
talk about the hair. Then.
I remember Snaps.
So let me repeat your order here. That'll be one double cheeseburger, ching.
Large fries and a large
soda, ching. Two kids meals and two medium sodas, ching. One chicken sandwich, large fries, and a vanilla milkshake. Bada bing. That'll be $62.75. We're a little shy.
Remember when you could feed your whole family fast food for less than $10? Well, it's Snaps.
Yeah, it was Snaps in Dayton before it was Rally's.
Okay. I feel like you can click here to see the Rally's.
So let me repeat your order here. That'll be identical. One double.
Yeah, they just change it out. Oh my gosh, things we didn't know about regional advertising when we were kids. Man, they tricked us.
Yeah, Snaps, Rally's, and Checkers are all the same.
Man, we should have totally saved that for season two when
when Seth Green actually shows up. Yeah. Butt heads.
Man, that ad is so banal, so boring. I can't believe we all like got so sucked into that.
I think his performance is really good in that. Yeah. His weird smirk after he gives the price is awesome.
He's kicking, he's jumping. You could tell he had it in him to be in a very unpopular CW show. 8 years later.
Also, he was young Woody Allen in Radio Days.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Well, let's.
And he's in Stephen King's It as a kid.
I like it because he doesn't even have a real, like, the register is all digital and he's making all the old timey sound effects for the register. It's great.
And that was 1991. That was like what, 20 years ahead of its time. He already knew he had to make the digital sound effects because the real thing didn't exist.
It's all like right, when I drive an electric car and I go brrr.
We should totally
legally you have to do that. It's too dangerous on the road. Right,
I'm pulling us back on the rails. We're on the rails again.
And, thanks, Travis, conductor. Yeah, Travis.
We have to be on the rails. So, because the Buffy episode, I don't know what you guys thought about this episode. It's clearly a standalone episode. There's not a whole lot that's transferred from one. There's not a whole lot that they're going to take away from this episode. Spoiler, I guess. I don't know. And so in the realm of Buffy season one, standalone episodes, it's good. It's certainly, you know, you don't hate any of the characters. I guess the question is, were you entertained enough by all the different nightmares? I think that's like, the bottom line is, this is a solid episode. Saddens me that we don't really take away much. I do like it better than Praying Mantis or The Pack. Just because.
Yeah, definitely.
Just because those are just so... Just have really high moments, but the low moments in The Pack and the Praying Mantis episode, they're so low when they have low moments. So I don't know, that's kind of how I thought about this episode. I thought it was much more even tempered. I don't know what you guys think.
Pacing's really great on this episode. It's a really well paced story moving from thing to thing. And even though, like many Buffy things, it doesn't care to care about revealing information, right? It doesn't care what you know and in what order. I feel like the coach reveal at the end is still kind of affecting and surprising. Though, I mean, the guy just goes to jail at the end, right? Like, oh man, he went to jail, you know? Like, the comeuppance that he deserves, which is to be like, killed in a nightmare world, doesn't happen. So it's like, yeah, he went to jail, he beat up that kid. You know? Put that kid in a coma.
Yeah, I think the episode works its best when we're seeing some of the more banal nightmares played out. Like, even Wendell's nightmare is great once he explains it because he realizes it's more about guilt than fear. But the child abuse aspect, it's like, it's not, it's kind of scary. It's upsetting when you think about that that's what's under this episode. But they don't seem to take it, the episode doesn't seem to have the emotional maturity to take that really seriously.
No, Xander even jokes about child abuse at the end.
So. Right. Yeah, it just feels like a PSA at the end. This sort of, it's very wrapped up, like a after school special or something.
Yeah. Oh, also the coaches. It's not. It's Kitty League.
Yeah, Kitty League.
which of course abusers work at Kitty League.
It's such a... not a great name.
No background checks for Kitty League coaches. Yeah.
We don't know if he's a repeat offender. We don't know much about what's going on in his home life.
That's true. I am a little bit disturbed that he's not a parent.
Like, right. You don't want the coach that's not a parent. Absolutely not.
I mean,
this episode shows you why you don't want a coach who's not a parent.
But like a parent at least has a reason to be emotionally involved in the outcome of a child's baseball game. This guy is not like he's worried that his child's disappointing or that his child's going to, you know, not be a great athlete. He's just that engaged with this weird volunteer thing he's doing.
You get paid to be those coaches, John.
So what's that?
You get paid for coaching.
The league, really?
Yeah.
Look, we all know the story. He's an alcoholic. He's a gambler.
Bet on his own game.
The movie you didn't see that you want to see is like this Bad News Bears alternative film where he has a ragtag bunch of kids and he keeps them in line like a drill instructor. And because he's got to win this big cash, but because he's an alcoholic, he's really not doing much to like keep things really in line. He's not really paying attention to what they're doing. He's just counting all the invisible money in his head half the time. He's going to make when these kids score big and go to the world championship in Tokyo. And I can't wait. And then when the chances get blown, some of those kids got to suffer.
So this is like an alternate scene from Bad News Bears where Walter Matthau, like at the end, instead of them drinking beer, he like beats what's his name? Who's the main kid in that? But he beats him into a coma. And then, like,
wait, what if what's really happening here is that
the Haley Joel Osment
is the coach's nightmare?
It's it's not Haley Joel Osment. It's the guy who played Rorschach in Watchmen, and he played he's in the series The Preacher. What's his name? He's a good actor, but he was never mind. It's not important. I'm sorry. That's so derailing.
John, what's your theory? I want to hear it.
Here's my theory. It's my new headcanon for this episode is that what's really happening is that the magic of the child's, you know, making all the nightmares come true is what ends up happening to the coach is that his worst nightmare is being confronted about being an abuser. And so that comes true, thus ending the nightmare.
So like the kid never really woke up from the coma. It's just the nightmare where the kid wakes up from the coma, and we're all still technically living inside it.
Well, yeah, we're all it's still been resolved. In it. Yeah, exactly.
just like well, because at the end of season 7, they cut to that kid like still in a coma, and he's an adult now. It's like
I mean, clearly, like yeah, I bet that kid's still in a coma, and I mean, because how could this not happen?
Because oh my gosh,
what would the guy's nightmare be other than that? And if it's affecting everybody.
I hope it doesn't happen that in season 10 of Buffy, the last episode, this kid is like a grown man in a coma, wakes up.
It was all a nightmare. But the first 9 episodes of Buffy are true. But after that, it's all just nightmares.
It's like, good morning after your 10-year coma sleep. By the way, vampires are real. That part's not part of your dream.
Run!
Good point, though. If something terrible happens to you in your own life, you might want to consider visiting the hospital to see if there's any weird kids in a coma that may have be causing the nightmare world that you're now living in. We're all susceptible to that. Coma nightmares. Now, stupid Nightmare on Elm Street question. All the bad things happen in the dream world, and then they're real, right? But, like, it's just kind of slippery about when you enter the dream world.
Yeah.
But, like, people who are not dreaming get killed sometimes, right?
No, mostly you're dreaming. You die in the dream. You die in real life.
Okay, that's all they do.
Freddy has some ability to manipulate outside the world. Like in the first one, he really hangs a guy in jail. And in 3, they resurrect his skeleton and he fights 2 people as like a zombie skeleton while trying to kill people in a dream also. So that probably didn't answer your question, but it proved my Nightmare on Elm Street knowledge pretty well.
Yeah, but the rules are pretty messy on anything that involves dreams. You can basically do whatever you like, unless you're Christopher Nolan and the movie is Inception, in which case there's very strict rules for how dreams operate.
That they're going to lecture you about for most of the movie.
Yeah, it's a lecture on what Christopher Nolan thinks dreams are.
Complex video games. yeah, I would not recommend Inception if you like dreamlike movies, because that movie does not operate under dream logic at all, but video game logic.
It's,
if you're a 19-year-old film student, you'll love it.
All right, well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Buffy Virgin.
Oh, hey, just because this episode's going to air in a couple weeks, right? Mm-hmm. January 25th, pick up She-Wolf number 5 from your local comic shop. I have a pinup in that. And if you're a fan of Buffy, you might enjoy She-Wolf. It's by my friend Rich Tomaso. So it's put out by Image Comics. All right, that's my little self-promotion for the week. All right.
You also promoted somebody else. It's not only yourself.
Yeah. It's
pretty good. Pretty good promotion.
Thanks for listening. Reach out to us at BuffyVirgin.com in the comments section to talk more about Buffy. Yeah, anyway, thanks so much. Have a great week.